a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
The R1 News Headlines.
Kia ora. This is the R1 News Bulletin for Thursday the 9th of May. I'm Jonah.
And I'm Charlie. In university news, University of Otago staff and students have released an open letter urging the university to cut economic ties with Israel and condemn international universities that punish students who are protesting. Dr. Peyton Bond, Dr. Olivier Dutau and other university academic staff have sent an open letter to the university with a list of demands for the university to meet to continue the university's promise of honouring commitments to decolonisation and human rights. This letter demands the uni to endorse the boycott of Israel movement by disclosing and cutting any economic ties with the apartheid state, condemning any university that has called the police to remove protesters from campus grounds violently, and calling for the protection of the rights these students have to protest and assemble and endorse the aims of their protests. In essence, this letter demands the university to call for a liberated Palestinian state if it still wants to conceptualize itself as a university that seeks to confront its settler colonial foundations. Since its release, this letter has garnered many signatures from academics, alumni and students. In a statement given to Critic Te Arihi yesterday, Otago University Acting Vice-Chancellor Professor Helen Nicholson has replied to this letter. Nicholson expressed her deepest sympathies for the people of Gaza and added that the university has been approached by several different groups and individuals concerned with what is happening. She states that her focus has been on the well-being of the university community as there are students of various cultures and ethnicities at this institution. She must ensure that everyone in this community feels safe and protected. The University of Otago understands the importance of peaceful protests and the right to freedom of expression, as just last year they hosted peaceful protests on campus. The university also believes that its academics should be able to speak on any area of their expertise, including the current events in Gaza. Nicholson finished her statement by adding, "To the best of my knowledge, the university does not have any economic ties to Israel. At 1:30, we will have Dr. Peyton Bond and Dr. Olivier Dutau to speak on this open letter."
Due to maintenance work and acoustic improvements in Ubar, yesterday's Pie Night was held in Owhyiorda, the university's newly developed cafe and social space in the Union Building. A stacked lineup of bands played, including Purple Dog, The Lions, Dizzy, Albatross, and Columbus. Ubar announced shortly beforehand on social media that it was temporarily shut due to maintenance work, and that all of its usual events would be held upstairs for a while. They did not specify when the venue would reopen. Jordan, from the Radio 1 team, who attended last night's Pie Night, said that the line moved a lot quicker than usual, which was a relief given the rain and cold last night. Due to the longer space of Owhyiorda, Jordan also claimed that there was more space than usual on the dance floor than Ubar. However, at the front, the mosh pit was as packed as ever, and the attendance was solid despite the change of venue.
In national news, recent One News polls show a significant dip in support for the coalition government. Highlighting the limits of trying to govern when parties cannot get along, Joe McManus of The Spinoff reports, "The latest One News Variant poll shows a sudden shift in who New Zealand wants to govern. The poll reveals that if an election were to be held now, National Act and New Zealand First would be out of power." Speaking in a political opinion, McManus says this is a catastrophic turnaround for the government that has only been in power for 5 months, and that parties within the coalition are behaving in a way that opposition parties would typically act. McManus says, quote, "This government is in power because they were good at being in opposition, but they aren't in opposition. But they aren't in opposition anymore. They're the government." Unquote.
Green Party MP Julianne Genter has apologised after multiple allegations of intimidating behaviour. Last week, National accused her of physically intimidating and attacking their minister Matt Ducey during a parliament debate, RNZ reports. Last Wednesday, during a debate over roading projects, Genter crossed the floor of parliament and approached Ducey. Genter waved a book in his face and repeatedly urged him to read the report in a raised voice. Parliament Deputy Speaker Barbara Courager interrupted the exchange and urged Genter to return to her seat. National MP Dr. Vanessa Wienick said that some MPs initially found the exchange amusing. However, after further reflection, she stated that it was an extraordinary outburst and intimidating in nature. Parliament Speaker Jerry Brownlee said that Genter's actions were not appropriate and did not reflect well on Parliament. Genter apologised to the House, stating that it was not her intention to be intimidating. A Green Party spokesperson told RNZ that Genter's actions were unacceptable.
New Zealand principals are concerned that the government may be rolling out their new education policies too fast and urge them to slow down, reporters from One News report. the government has recently announced a pledge of $67 million to the rollout of newly structured literacy standards in all schools across Aotearoa, requiring schools to now use this approach when teaching students to teach. This is one of the many ways the government is trying to revamp the education system, alongside the cell phone ban and mandatory hour of reading, writing and maths. This morning, the New Zealand Principals Federation released a statement calling on the government to slow down the implementation of these policies. Federation President Leanne Otene has stated, "The abrupt shift in priorities and expectations is disruptive and undermines the ability of educators to provide quality teaching and support to our students." Otene also said that she has welcomed the added funding to the system and having another literacy option to consider. However, it is much more complex than the government has made it out to be. Otene does not consider this new approach to be a silver bullet and points out that many schools have been using this new approach alongside more traditional ones since 2018. This federation believes that meaningful collaboration and thoughtful planning by all parties are essential to fostering sustainable improvements in our education system, as there is no short-term fix to this issue.
In international news, the World Health Organization continues to call for a ceasefire deal to be made between Israel and Hamas, as fuel needed to run hospitals in southern Gaza runs low. On Wednesday, Israel seized the Rafah border crossing, a main route for humanitarian aid into Gaza. Al Jazeera reports. In a statement made on X, World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said fuel that the United Nations Health Agency had expected to be allowed in on Wednesday had been blocked, and that there is only enough fuel left for hospitals in Gaza for 3 more days. UNICEF and the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees are also calling for Israel to open the crossing for aid. Despite such reports, Israel says it is not restricting aid into Gaza. The largest hospital in Rafah is also no longer functioning, medical aid for Palestine has said to Al Jazeera, leaving only 3 hospitals operating in Rafah. One of these is solely maternal hospital, one of these is solely a trauma stabilization point, and the last 16-person capacity NGO hospital. Israel says it will continue its assault on Rafah to defeat Hamas. 1.4 million Palestinian civilians are taking refuge in the city under Israel's previous evacuation orders. Today, 25 people were wounded after Israeli artillery fire struck a part of central Rafah that Israel did not call on Palestinians to evacuate ahead of its incursion.
This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Thursday, the 9th of May. Today's bulletin was written by Charlie Cunningham, Jonah Broughton, and Jemima Lorimer, and read to you by Charlie Cunningham and Jonah Brighton.
That was the R1 News headlines. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram, and tune in to R1 News on weekdays.
Up next for you, we have Cinnamon by TJ Sand, and just a reminder that at 1:30 we will be having Dr. Tayton Bond and Dr. Olivier Dutau coming in to talk to us.
Kia ora, and welcome back to R1 News. Now we're joined by Dr. Olivier Dutel and Dr. Peyton Bond. Olivier is a lecturer in the Film, Media and Communications Department, and Peyton is a teaching fellow in the Sociology, Gender Studies and Criminology Department. They're here to chat with us about the open letter to the university, in support of the Boycott, Divest and Sanctions movement, and students' right to protest for a ceasefire in Palestine, on international university campuses, and here in Aotearoa. Would you be able to briefly tell us about the 3 demands of this letter?
Listen, credit where it's due. Peyton came, she's been sort of gathering folks who, like myself, have been aghast watching developments on campuses across the world, seeing suppression of protest and speech, and in general, the sort of the challenge to hold 2 rogue states, America and Israel, accountable for unbelievable and undeniable war crimes that we see right before our eyes. And it really is just incumbent upon us to do our part to speak up, and then to ask of our university, are we invested in any, you know, an endowment is this complex thing, a grab bag full of different financial instruments, and do any of those things have any relations to weapons manufacturers or tech companies that do business with the apartheid state of Israel. And if we do have those, then we should really divest. And frankly, this is a tough one because this is one that makes people feel a little bit iffy. But yes, we should, as a university, academically boycott the state of Israel, because even at the university sector, this is where the sort of incredible minutia of apartheid law and legal policy that justifies like the deployment of AI in the battlefield, you know, a real sort of horrible cutting edge of a kind of genocidal war machine. And we should not have associations, academic associations, with those types of things. And then, of course, there's the campus crackdown, I mean, which I know, Peyton, you've been watching. It's just unconscionable.
Mm. Yeah, I'll add to that. I mean, I've been following this, you know, for a long time now, and there was an open letter to all universities just, like, right in the beginning, like, back in October. But it started to feel especially, like, I mean, we didn't see a lot of action from Otago or any action from Otago at that stage. And I think that there's a real point of connection here that we need to think about, because, I mean, I'm from the U.S. originally. My university that I went to for undergrad was one of the universities that cracked down, like, with police, called in police violence, pepper sprayed students, you know, beat them up. So Thursday I sort of woke up and I was like, I'm really tired of watching this while being employed by Otago to, like, teach scholars like Angela Davis, and then we need to then also be, like, yeah, putting our money where our mouth is, like, and that's just, it's incredibly needed. And so, yeah, we're calling for an endorsement of the BDS, and as well as, like, we want to know, it, like, what are the ties that Otago has, and, like, what needs to happen, and so that we can push for divestment. I think that it's also high time for Otago to condemn the universities, I mean, that we have relationships with, like, you know, these are our peers, that are faculty and students who are at these universities that we work with, that we go to conferences with, etc.
Yeah, university is a very cosmopolitan thing, right? Like, here we are, a couple of Americans. I'm a Kiwi also, but, like, you know, so it does, those connections exist in and through universities. And university brings a lot of sort of prestige to things that may be unconscionable. So we really should actually stand on some real principles on this stuff. And, you know, just like the anti-apartheid Springbok Tour movement was like a sort of defining movement, this is also globally becoming this real litmus test. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because the political right is moving in. They're worried about woke kids on campuses and free speech. It's like, no, this is really the free speech issue on campuses. I mean, this is the repression of young people, many of them young Jewish people, Voices for Peace. That's unconscionable repression. And it represents a war on campuses like we've never really seen since, like, the Vietnam War era. And we all think back to those times as sort of like, you know, a break and a shift and important moments where students and universities were the sort of moral and critical conscience of our society. So we can't be immune from that. Even in little old Aotearoa, we've got to stand on these principles because, you know, we're part of these global networks, right? We are actually about to sort of progress or join into the American military alliance known as AUKUS. So, like, this stuff is going to come for us here. So, and then, of course, you know, the war, the genocide on Gaza and Rafah continues. So here's what we can do.
Yeah. Just trying to, add voices to, especially to Eyes on Rafah, 600,000 children in that space that are just being bombed relentlessly. And there's no words to describe it.
And one last thing. They've destroyed all the universities, right? They've killed three VCs, essentially, or presidents of tertiary education. I mean, like, this is just, it's a war on Palestinian history and culture and intellectual thought. And it's remarkable because Palestinians are among the most educated, highly trained, postgraduate level sort of national populations anywhere in the world. And that's been a sort of central mission of how Palestinian culture and nationhood has persevered through that. And you know, this war on Palestinian intellectual cultural heritage that's part of the genocide.
And having said all that, do you guys know how many signatures you've gotten so far on your letter?
Yes. So I checked it at 12 p.m. and we're at 541 signatures. That's a mix of student, staff, and alum. We originally had said students and staff, but we just kept having alum reach out who also wanted to be involved, and we thought that was also important. So yeah, we were at 541 and counting.
And it's this is actually really, you know, that it's taken off because it's not like we're marking papers. We're kind of busy. It's not like we had a sort of marketing strategy of like, here's how we're going to crack this number by X day. But so that's a really amazing thing.
And yeah, so, it's huge. And yeah, thank you to everyone who's signing, and please like keep signing and sharing that. We've got the links all around, and we're starting to put posters up around campus, and hopefully the university will respond in the affirmative to our demands.
Yeah, I think we've reached out. Several academics have written before to some of the senior leadership team to just sort of like say, look, you know, where is our leadership standing on these vital issues? But I think the war on college campuses is kind of like this major tipping point where you can't both sides this issue at this stage.
No, yeah, that's amazing. And so recently we've had the Whanganui District Council was just called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Would this be something we could be expecting from the Dunedin City Council or the Otago Regional Council or anything in that manner?
Ooh, it's not been... I've not had a lot of joy with DCC. Did they because there was an attempt to... I forget the holiday... or the Palestinian National Day, where there was an effort by some councillors to raise the Palestinian flag, and that got a bit of backlash. And Christine Gary, Mary Lefiso, Jim O'Malley, well, no, not Jim, Steve Walker. I mean, there's, you know, there have been some real allies in council who go regularly to the Palestine protests. But I don't see that forthcoming in the current coordinates of the kind of council leadership. That's my view of this. I don't know. Yeah. Do you have any?
I mean, I would just hope that maybe Otago, University of Otago, could start by calling for immediate ceasefire, and hopefully the DCC will follow, because I think, I mean, Otago is a pretty big part of Dunedin, and I think that's the first step that Otago could do to then hopefully, yeah, push DCC and more. I think Otago has a real opportunity here to be among, like, what is quite few, like, Western institutions who have spoken out in support of a liberated Palestine. And I really, really hope they do.
It feels like an easy moral choice. And part of doing this here at Otago is we do have that privilege. Like, it's not that it's a complex that there are, like, if there are parts of the endowment or our holdings that have, you know, the bad stocks, the naughty stocks, it can't be, you know, it's not that there are particular big billionaire investors in our universities with a lot of political clout. So the fact that this is probably a reasonably low bar to clear means that, yeah, we could be real leaders in that way, and I'd love to see that from our senior leadership team.
And there's clearly an appetite. Yeah, the signatures just keep rolling in.
So Auckland University recently called for a protest encampment for pro-Palestinian protesters not to go ahead. What's your take on that? How are you hoping to see other unis in New Zealand follow suit?
Yeah, so there was staff at Auckland a few days before our open letter came out also wrote an open letter, which has a significant amount of signatures, saying that before they, I think my understanding is that Auckland contacted the New Zealand police to talk about how to sort of handle the student protesters rather than speaking to the students and staff to the actual university before immediately going to the police, which is what we saw happen in the States in such a violent manner. And so the staff were like, that's not okay. And so there's that open letter. The University of Canterbury also has an open letter and disrupted their careers fair in the last couple days. And I was thinking right before I came on, it's amazing that thank you for having us, because I haven't seen in any major New Zealand things the fact that there are at least three open letters to universities with, I would say, between the three, at least 1,000, if not more, signatures. And I haven't seen any coverage from RNZ spinoff stuff, unless I've missed something.
Yeah,
but not so
I think
far.
There's a, if I were to explain that, I think this is part of our, we're at a distance, both culturally and geographically. So I'm American, I'm Jewish. American Jewish life and culture is such a key part of America and New York media, and there is a kind of cultural world in which these conversations are really at the heart of American mm-hmm. politics. And of course, there is a very influential Israel lobby in the U.S. And we're not really – I think our media is not sure, not so confident how to talk about, you know, the distinctions between Zionism and Judaism. Right now, we're seeing these outrageous, egregious, frankly, anti-Semitic laws that say that certain Orthodox members of the Jewish community or people like myself who don't invest in Israel as like the culmination of what it means to be Jewish, that voicing opposition to that notion, voicing opposition to Zionism is a form of anti-Semitism, which is crazy and outrageous. And I think that's sort of like, it look from afar, that looks quite difficult and messy, and I don't know if people have the literacy to sort of like grapple with this issue, but I would certainly encourage them to engage with the academics that are part of this and communities like Dainu, and there's lots of articulate, great sort of Jewish voices for peace here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So there you go. That's my little encouragement to the media.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And just to kind of round out this interview, we've just got one more question. Where can University of Otago students, staff and alumni go to read and sign this letter? And if they wish, well, if they wish to sign it, and what else could be done locally to support the people of Gaza at this time?
So I'll start with the second part, if that's okay. So there are rallies every Saturday. They are at 2 p.m. on the museum lawn. They walk into the Octagon. So if you'd prefer not to, you know, walk along, you can join the Octagon around 2:45. Renaud Tamimi is doing a really excellent The Watermelon Report, if anyone's interested in learning more about what's going on. So there's a really active, active movement in Dunedin. Follow Dunedin Palestine on Instagram, Twitter.
And I gotta say, that's a really healthy thing to sort of what to do with your sense of despair and, you know, feeling of powerlessness, which is just to like meet the people that are also in that. And think about how we're going to take these values and concerns into our daily lives. Mm-hmm. And also to just correro with, you know, the Dunedin Palestinian community who are, you know, really want to receive as many people, interested people to express solidarity as possible. And it's, you know, it's emotionally quite a ride because the thinking about this reality is very difficult, but it does make you feel, you know, better, and thinking about how we'll deal with not just this question of justice, but other questions of justice, right? Mm-hmm. So why are Mana Finua so invested and vocal in this sort of Palestinian solidarity movement? Because there's shared histories. There's currents that run throughout these bigger questions. But the letter, where are we finding the letter?
Oh, yes. So first of all, there will be posters up around Otago with a QR code where you can follow the link. The link is also I'm not sure if the ODT actually put the link in there when they did
Google
it.
The,
I think if you just Google University of Otago letter, the link is like everywhere.
As you say, we've slow rolled this campaign,
so we're to
be at 500 with that. It's amazing.
Yeah, Twitter, Instagram. There's things that are floating around there. You're also my email address is on the Otago website. Email me if you want to sign it and can't find it. And please keep sharing because it would be really great to have like this. I mean, we're part of the same society, like you were saying. Like we're all part of this, and we need to cut through the apathy, the feeling that we can't make change. Like we need to actually just get together and do it, because then we can. That's how it happens. That's how it's always happened.
Well, thank you very much, Olivier and Peyton, for coming in and talking to us this afternoon. It's been our first R1 News interview, so we really appreciate it.
Yeah, great work.
Thank you.
Thank you all for tuning in to Radio 1 News on this Thursday. Up next for you, we've got a song titled Fish by Heart the Eclair, and I hope you all have a great afternoon.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.